Black Talk Radio Network is made possible in part with help from the Black Talk Media Project, a North Carolina-based nonprofit engaged in the production and distribution of independent digital black media. Find out more by going to blacktalkradionetwork.com or blacktalkmediaproject.org and look for the menu tab, Crowdfunding Black Media. Black Talk Media Project, helping to provide you with new black media for the new millennium. Opinions expressed by callers, guests, and hosts do not necessarily reflect those of the Black Talk Radio Network and Black Talk Media Project. Black Talk Radio is new black media for the new millennium.
Onaji Waweed, co-host of Race Treaty. We come to you every Friday evening, 9 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, p.m., to bring you information about human rights as it relates to the covenant to eliminate racial discrimination, xenophobia, and other related intolerances. And in this way, we want to let you know who was using this protocol in terms of the principles, in terms of the philosophy, in terms of the practice. It's about life. It's about the affirmation of these human rights principles and how do we implement them in our local spaces, in our state spaces, in the federal spaces, and certainly in the international space, right? Every level of social, political, economic organization that we have some affiliation with, we want to make sure that we have the highest level of human rights thinking and application in those areas. Tonight is a program where we're going to introduce a subject that we really haven't spoken about at all. To my recollection, the founder of the program, Robin Benton, will be best to answer that question. And that is, where does forgiveness fit into the whole human equation? Not just in terms of reparations, and which means restitution, compensation, and rehabilitation, not only in terms of the gross human rights violations, the egregious human rights violations, but where does forgiveness fit in terms of our own personal relationships, our family relationships, our community relationships, the states that we live in, the world? How does forgiveness fit into all these levels of human existence and activity? We're going to start the conversation tonight, certainly not end it, but we're going to start the conversation tonight with someone who has been contemplating. No, that's the least of it. Someone who's lived all of those levels. Painfully so. And you're going to come to understand why I say painfully so have lived these levels. Tonight we have with us Ulysses Butch Slater. And Mr. Slater is a social entrepreneur, author, and filmmaker. He is the person behind the powerful documentary series Odyssey to Save Ulysses. He's a recipient of the 2013 Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Award in Philadelphia. His expertise in difficult family reconciliations is the subject of the transformative documentary series Reconciled, which he hosts and co-created with GRB Entertainment. The program, in fact, aired on Oprah Winfrey Network in November 2012. Now we're going to get into some personal matters. At the fragile age of 12, Mr. Slater listened as his mother, Carice, I need you to sit down for this, was shot to death, and I need you to lay down for this, by his father, Ulysses Grant, Slaughter Sr., emerging from his bedroom on June 25th, 1978, he watched as his mother bled from two gunshot wounds to her head and takes some of her last breaths of life. Stepping over his mother's fallen body that day was the first, most important act in his amazing odyssey towards forgiveness. We're going to talk about that. He graduated high school in Chicago, Quigley Seminary South Preparatory High School. Mr. Slater pondered a future, in fact, as a Catholic priest, intrigued by existential theories and fate, you might say, free will concepts. He spent considerable time reflecting on the death of his mother, the murder of his mother, and the role of the supreme being in the interactions of humankind. He went on to serve as a journalist in the United States Navy. He holds a master's degree in Lincoln University, and Mr. Slater was the chief architect of One Taste Reconciliation Council, a body of international consultants tasked with development of prevention, intervention, and resolution policies for sex and intimacy practitioners. Mr. Slater has appeared three times, count one, two, three, on Dr. Phil's show and was recently interviewed by Suzanne Roberts, for her CNN headline news series, Seeking Solutions with Suzanne. He recently completed his third book, Forgive, the New Mantra and Practice for Black Men. Wow. Whew. Take a breath, everyone. Just take a breath on that one, because that is a lot to take in at one time. Someone who's given us a very tiny glimpse of his life and his journey. And at this point, I'd like to welcome my brother, Butch, to Race Treaty. Good evening, my brother.
Good evening, Brother Onaje. It's a pleasure to be here with you. I thank you so much for having me.
You know, I can say that in this lifetime, I've witnessed one miracle, at least one, maybe more, but one that is unquestionably one of the greatest miracles. And that is I was in attendance when Butch had convened the community in Chester, Pennsylvania, to witness a conversation and a reconciliation of him and his father on stage, not as a production, but as a village healing ceremony. In addition to the event itself, he decided that he would want to share that with the wider community as an example of what can happen. If a son can forgive his father for shooting his mother, then I would have to ask the question, what could not be healed when someone has demonstrated that level of generosity and forgiveness? So, Butch, I want you to share with the audience, and we're going to have you back, because certainly 1 hour is just not enough with the remaining minutes we have. But I just want to just open up the floor and just give you some space to talk about your story, your journey.
Again, I say thank you. And as I listen to you talk, talk about the ceremony, as you so well put it, the ceremony, the ritual of reconciliation with me, my father, and you recall my two oldest sons, Malcolm and Khalil. When I think of, when I hear you talk, I remember, I see those images before me, and I remember walking into that space in Chester, Pennsylvania, a city that I've done a lot of work in, a city that helped to raise me to be the man that I am. I'm originally from Chicago, and anybody who looks at Chicago right now and sees all of the strife, particularly among brothers in the city of Chicago, and anybody who knows Chester, while it is significantly smaller than Chicago, experiencing a similar kind of strife, village strife, with all kinds of what would seem to be meaningless, useless violence. When I think about showing up that day with my father, who had come from Chicago to Chester, it is just an amazing thing. And as I say often, Onaje, I'm so glad, so grateful to be on this side of a conversation where there was a time where I was so full of hate. I was so full of rage, so full of frustration. I was just an entirely different guy. I went a very long time from June 25th, 1978, being there in the house when I hear those two gunshots go off, to it was March the 3rd, 2012, my father and I walked into that, it was City Hall, Chester City Hall, we walked into it together. I couldn't believe it, man. I couldn't believe that my father and I were standing before the community. It was the very first time my father and I had stood before the community and talked about together and talked about what we experienced since he and I were in a courtroom in June 1978. I was the chief witness against my father. I was the chief witness against my father in that situation. And it was painful, man. It was painful to sit there and be examined and cross-examined, and understanding that my mother had been buried, physically buried, and my father was sitting in the chair of the accused. It was tough, man. And it just seems like where I am now is an entirely different world. But I have to say, I am, as much as it hurts, and it hurts a lot sometimes, as much as it hurts, it's the sweetest pain. Being on this side of forgiving is the sweetest pain I will probably ever know. So I'm glad when I talk with people about forgiving and reconciliation, and I'm not simply coming from the position of somebody who has studied theories, and I'm not coming from the position of ideas alone. I'm coming from a place of real experience, deep experience. I'm coming from almost a cosmic, mythological kind of space where, of all transgressions, it is the father killing the mother. And above and beyond the symbolism, there's a substantive pain and anguish that I know, that I'm familiar with intimately. There's a pain that I can share, and a pain that can, I believe, help people to believe in incredible possibilities.
I would agree. What I witnessed that day is still planted deep in my soul, and it has nourished me to let me know that nothing is impossible. I mean, yeah. Nothing, there is nothing that is impossible. when a son can forgive his father for murdering his mother, that tells me nothing is impossible. I was so proud of you. And you did mention, you know, your sons, Malcolm and Khalil. I was so proud of you because I'm witnessing this man who has turned the destiny of his family 180 degrees around. Mm-hmm. I remember, Butch, you telling me that your name means hero of sorts, you know, one who stands up and does what one has to do. I mean, actually, it's really a name that I would probably say is an epitome of manhood. And in the rubric of an act of a crime, not just a crime, but an act of senseless violence like this, one would think that the hero would avenge the mother's death.
Right.
By in fact killing the father. And you've meditated on that years. I don't know how many ways in which you had come up with the way that it was going to take place. But I witnessed you giving your sons and giving all the prodigy from the line, from that line, from this point forward, giving them a new destiny. You gave them a destiny, whereas they can see their father truly as a divine archetype of what the hero looks like by taking the very highest level of spiritual realm by pursuing, first, I would have to say truth, and then I would have to say forgiveness. And the reason I put it like that is I also remember you saying what made you change was you asked yourself the question honestly, and you answered the question honestly, what would my mother want? I remember that. And when you asked the question in earnest, you was truly seeking an answer. And in the depth of your soul, you had to respect the answer that came back to you. How often can we ask for something and then not want and reject the answer when it comes to us and do what we want anyway? Because that was ego when one does that. This was not ego. Your ego for the previous X amount of years only saw one thing, you killing your father. But you responded and saying, this isn't what my mother wants.
Brother, I tell you, as I listen to you, it's just overwhelming sometimes, Onaje. I think about, as you said, what is truth? You're absolutely right. What is true here? And as I think I said, and I say often, there was this period in my life where, you know, I would look at my children and in those moments, wish that my mother could see my children, wish that, you know, they could be together. And in fact, as I said, my mother lives in my children. And see, these are the truths that we don't we don't spend enough time with. See, for me to avenge my or in my mind, for me to take that particular direction with my father, for me to talk about avenging would mean that in fact he had killed my mother. And in fact, that's just not true. And so for me to, as you say, hear, put a call out and ask a question, and asking that question of my mother, Clarice, and Clarice means clarity. Clarice means clear. It means beautiful. It means famous. It doesn't mean victim. It doesn't mean death. For me to put that question out, what do I do with this? What do I do in this situation? And to remember what my mother used to say to me when I was a little boy, which was, I would say, you know, when will I be old enough to fight my father? And my mother would always say, you'll never be old enough to fight your father. I just want you to be a better man. And she never said, Onaje, that I was a better man. She was very clear that I had a choice. and that I could be a better man. And what she said was, I want you to be a better man. So for me to avenge as if I was avenging in her name, that is not what she called me to do. That is, she didn't never ask me to do that. Like you said, the ego in me, the pain in me, wanted to respond. You know, I'm a man now. I'm not a boy anymore, so I want to respond like I think a man is supposed to respond. Well, it depends on what kind of man we're talking about. And so the better man that my mother called me to be is the better man that I chose to be. And again, I'm glad. It gave her the right place in our family's history. It gives her the right place in our family's history. It elevates our family. It gives us new standards, new expectations, new understanding, new possibilities. There was a renewal there versus a second death and a third death. Breaking the cycle for me, the potential downward spiral, eliminating that possibility was important to me.
You mentioned the hate that you harbored. So this wasn't an overnight, you know, epiphany. This wasn't just like a miracle that just came down from the sky. If you were to look back and say there were stages of this journey, what would you say are those stages? Is it 2 stages, 5 stages? What is the stages? Because you are living a truth and a healing that has created a blueprint. And it may not be the same for everyone,
right?
But it might be quite close to it. You right. are now in a position to give us guidance in what one might expect
right.
when tragedies right. like this happen. And certainly we would want them not to ever happen again, but right. if not exactly like your similar ones, what would you say those stages were that you went through?
I think that the stages really show and become very clear in 2005 for me. And that was the stage of confrontation. It was the stage of revisiting after years had gone by of me trying to ignore and live life in what I thought was a normal way, no matter how much that memory would wake me in my sleep, no matter how much I would, you know, hear certain songs and be reminded of my parents, no matter how much I tried to avoid it. Ultimately, what was necessary and what happened was there was a stage of confrontation where I just had to look a particular situation right in the face. Now, when I talk now philosophically, theoretically, and all that kind of stuff, I can say a whole lot of really interesting things. But all I know is that the raw confrontation of looking that situation square in the face, not turning my eyes from it, not pretending anymore, but remembering I was there. I heard the gunshots. I heard my father say, I'll kill you. I saw my mother in the floor. I heard my father say I had to do it. There was a confrontation, and the confrontation was really, it was a really interesting slow burn, and it was an internal confrontation first, Sonaje. I had to admit to myself that, hey, you can't keep pretending like this. You're being eaten alive by this thing. Slowly but surely, you're being eaten alive. So the first stage was confrontation that ultimately had me go from 2005 to 2010, where I traveled back to Chicago. And I went through the court documents. I found out that the court documents were still available in 2010. I traveled back to Chicago and went through those court documents, and I was overwhelmed by what I read. I was just overwhelmed looking at what 12-year-old Ulysses Butch Slaughter said, you know, the way that he was being questioned in court, his responses, my father's responses, my brother's responses, all these witnesses, all these people. I'm looking at this stuff, so I'm confronting this thing. And then I wound up 2 days after looking at that stuff in that box, I went to my father's doorstep and I confronted him. And I had been to his doorstep many times, wanting to ring the bell, sometimes standing in the shadows, just kind of stalking him. But this time I was going to confront him. And as it turns out, this time, December 19, 2010, he actually looked in my eyes. And when I looked in my father's eyes and I heard my mother's voice, the only thing that I could hear was her saying, "Be better." And that was something that she had said almost 40 years before that. She said, "Be better." And I just kind of fell apart. So there was the confrontation, and then there was the forgiving. That was stage two. But forgiving and reconciliation are not the same thing. You know, sometimes we hear people say stuff like, "I'll forgive, but I won't forget." For me, reconciliation would mean a restoration of sorts, a reestablishment of some kind of intimacy, or the most intimacy we could have. So stage one is confrontation. Stage two is forgiving. Reconciliation is that stage where you saw me, my father, and my children. Because see, I could have forgiven my father and just said goodbye. I don't ever want to talk to you again. I forgive you. Mm. But that wasn't enough for me. And it wasn't what he wanted either. And what I knew was true was that my children, my family, my wife then, everybody was kind of following my lead. This is an interesting thing for me, Onaji, that everybody on my side of the equation was following my lead. So whatever I wanted was okay with them. If I was saying I hated them, they hated them too. If I was saying I love them, they were saying they love them too. And so when I brought him to the house in 2012, I brought him to the house, Onaji. He died 2 months later after meeting his grandchildren for the first time. He died 2 months later. And when he came into that house, they loved him like their grandfather. They were so pleased to meet him. They were so happy to meet him. He was not a criminal. He was not a villain. He was their grandfather. They sat and wrote poetry together. They played checkers. They ate together. It was just amazing to me.
Yeah,
absolutely amazing.
You know, just sitting, you know, listening to this, you didn't share, that wasn't part of the conversation at Chester when so to hear the inside story of that, wow. I want to go back to you said that when you confronted him, I think it was December 19th, 2010.
That is correct.
And you heard your mother in the background say, "Be better."
That's right.
And then after that, you said that you collapsed or you something of that nature. What do you mean by collapse? What do you mean?
I mean, I always say I had a moment, I really had a moment of clarity. See, I thought that when I saw my father, I hadn't seen my father in 20 years prior to December the 19th, 2010. I hadn't seen his face in 20 years. When I left Chicago and joined the Navy in 1990, I hadn't seen my father since then. And when I came upon him this time, I hadn't seen him. So in my mind, Onaja, he was still 20 years younger. I was expecting the same dude to come walking out of the house that I had last seen. Mm. And here he comes walking out of the house, can barely walk, limping, just really fragile. And there was all of the hardness within me just washed away. Mm. It was like there was just this overwhelming compassion. I mean, here's the real deal, man. I'm like, "That's my father." Mm. I'm looking at this dude and I'm like, that's my father.
Wow.
And whatever he's done, that dude right there is my father. And so this kind of washing over, it was almost like somebody took some water and poured it on top of my head and just washed it all off of me. And I couldn't bear to stand there with that feeling of, you know, I thought I was, you know, I just knew I was going to choke this dude. I just knew I was going to attack him. And all I could feel was this washing over me when he stood in front of me. All I could hear was my mother saying, be better. It was almost, I felt, Onaje, like I was possessed in a way. Like I was just like being moved around and I was just being like a tool. Like somebody had just kind of possessed me and had me witnessing this thing. It was like an outer body experience, you know?
Mm.
And I just got washed. I could barely speak. I couldn't scream. I couldn't do anything. And I, for everything I thought I was going to do to him, all I said to him was something like, I saw what you said. Because I had read those court documents. I think I said something like, I saw what you said. And you told a lot of lies. And that's all that I could get out of my mouth. And I got in my car and I drove away.
And that was it. That was the whole, experience.
That was the moment. That was the moment. Yep.
So if looking back, how long do you think that took, that this episode?
Well, when I pulled up to his house, and I had pulled up to his house many times in the past, and he was never there, this was the first time that I pulled up to his house, and he was standing right there when I pulled up. He was getting out of his car, had just come home from church, he explained to me later, and he didn't see me. I was looking right at him. I was staring at him in my car, watching him get out of his car, and I was right next to him, and he didn't know who I was. And I pulled off to the side, and I sat there probably for easily for like 45 minutes just looking at his house. And I thought to myself, this is that moment. If after all the other times that I've been here and he wasn't here and he's here now, this is that cosmic moment where the planets have been properly aligned and it's time for me to kill this dude. Because I just got through reading what you said in court, and there you are, and the timing is right. And this is what this means. And so I get off the car. I walk over to him. Now, from the time that I went and knocked on his door and had him walk out, that probably took all of 5 minutes. I stared at him in silence for what felt like, 2-3 minutes. It was probably more like, 30 seconds. And he tried to come close to me, and I told him, don't come close to me. I saw what you said, and you lied. And I got in the car, and I drove off. When I got back home, I wrote him a letter. And I told him, if you ever want to talk to me again, you're going to have to tell me the truth about what happened to my mother. And he called me, and we screamed at each other and cried and just really, we just fell out. And I told him, from now on, when I go to domestic violence workshops, you have to go with me. And he said, okay. And I'm thinking to myself, this dude is lying. He is not going to do this. And that's when I started calling all these people and writing all these people. And one of the people that I wrote to was Dr. Phil's producer, and Dr. Phil's people responded to my inquiry within 2 or 3 hours. They were writing back to me saying they wanted to know more. And January 19th came around. January 19th, 2011. And there I am sitting on Dr. Phil's stage with my father on the phone from a hospital bed in Chicago. And then as part of the forgiving reconciliation process, on June 25th of that year, 2011, I drove back to Chicago, put my father in the car, and I took him to my mother's gravesite. Little did I know, Onaje, that he had never been and had no clue as to where my mother's gravesite was.
What was that date?
June 25th, 2011. It was the 33rd anniversary of her death. And I went back and picked him up, took him to the grave site. And I was so glad that a good friend of mine, Davis Northern, who's a videographer, filmmaker, went with us. And we were able to capture a lot of our conversation. And in that moment of him sitting at the gravesite, we were able to capture that. That's the footage that I use now when I'm going and talking to people and showing them what it is my father and I did together by going to the gravesite. We even have footage of that time that you saw us in Chester. We've got that footage. I've got footage of the first time he walked into the house and met his grandchildren. I've got footage of the last time I saw him when I put him on an airplane to fly back home on March the 7th, 2012. So those stages of confront, just looking at it, then the forgive, and that forgiving part really being about I'm letting this go to make way for something else. And then that reconciliation part where it's like, nah, I'm not letting you go. We're not letting one another go. It's not see you later, have a good life. It's welcome to my home. Welcome me to your home. Let's get to know one another again. That's what we decided to do. And I have to believe, Onaja, that my mother is extremely pleased with how her name is used in this world now.
Brother Butch, I am just as much amazed how God has entered your heart and your life and allowed you to take this journey that there's no other way to explain it other than a divine intervention, because if it was up to you, I would be visiting you in jail right now.
Yep.
If it was up to you, that hate would have consumed you and you would have kept on going. And then you would have to live with, what did I do? I just killed my father. What did I do? Yep. I just gave my children, my sons, this example of anytime anything happens to you, you go to the bottom of it. You go, and when I say bottom, not like that, not taking the high road, you take the low road. What did what destiny did I, in fact, kind of pre-manufacture for my sons to follow? How many generations would that have occurred? You know, I mean, the level of destruction and pain and suffering that could have been generated from that moment could have been infinite.
Yeah.
You could have been that person in that cell having to review that away from your sons, away from your family, away from the community, away from the world. But you chose the higher path. And you have given us a spiritual feast. You have given us a spiritual feast that we all can look to and benefit from. And every time I think about it and every time I, you know, use it in some kind of way, it just, as they say, it's a gift that keeps on giving, you know. I'm honored, brother, and humbled that the Creator has allowed me to be in your path, to cross your path and to witness this. Some of the work that I do with what is called Cure Violence, which is a gun, an urban gun prevention program in a number of cities. I work out of New York City. This has so much relevance to so many levels and so many situations. So this is the first conversation of many. We have discerned that there are at least four stages that I've noted, and you can can correct me. We talked about the confrontation stage. We talked about the forgiveness stage, the restoration stage, and the reconciliation stage. And I would like you at this time to tell the listening audience how, because you do have a radio show yourself, and I would imagine a website where they can actually purchase videos as well as books, get in touch with you for speaking engagements. Please share that information with our audience.
Thank you again, brother. Again, I can't say thank you enough. And I just want to, before I do that, I just want to really note something, underscore something. And it is when you said that I was given an opportunity. The redemption was all the way around. So my father provided an opportunity for me to be redeemed as well. And it's a strange thing. People don't see, a lot of times people don't see that part of this conversation. Mm-hmm. They don't see that I was going to a proverbial hill too, and that it was my father making himself available and I making myself available to my father. It was a co-created redemption. And I think about my father now, Najee, and it's the strangest thing, man. It's just, it's beautiful. So people who, if you want to reach out to me, you can reach me at UlyssesButchSlaughter.com. That is my website. And
spell that out.
You can, it's UlyssesButchSlaughter. ButchSlaughter, UlyssesButchSlaughter.com. And you can find videos there. You can email me to get more information. I'm always interested in speaking about this matter. I am a very fortunate man, and I want to share my fortune with as many people as I can. You're right, it's the gift that keeps on giving. And I want to give as much as I can. I have a new book, if I could mention that. The book is called Forgive, the New Mantra and Practice for Black Men. And what this book is, Onaji, is it's the answer that I give to people when they ask me, what was it? How do you think you were fortified and prepared to forgive? Well, when I reflect on it, I was fortified with black men like Gil Scott-Heron and Elijah Muhammad and Fred Hampton and Booker T. Washington, Stokely Carmichael, Malcolm X, of course, James Baldwin, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. I can name many black men that I've read over the years. And in my absence from my father, these were some of the men that I called on, that I read, that I listened to, Stevie Wonder. I mean, these are men that were part of my life, directly and indirectly, some of them, who sent me messages through their songs, through their books. And I learned lessons from these men. And so it was, in many ways, it was impossible for me to exact justice through revenge, because my teachers they weren't those types of men. My teachers believed in redemption of black men. So that book can be found at the website. And again, brother, I appreciate the opportunity to speak with you. I'm looking forward to our ongoing developing relationship. And anything I can do to help the listening audience, please reach out to me.
This is Onaji Muweed, co-host of Race Treaty. And I think more than any other shows that I've produced, this one strikes at the heart of it, of my life and my work, about healing and now this other layer of forgiveness. I haven't spoken much about that. And maybe it's there's some places I need to forgive. And I'm going to ask Brother Butch to help me find those places and help me walk me through So I have many plans with you, my brother, and with the listening audience. But if God gives us the time and gives us the health to unfold those plans, certainly they will be part of our story together. So this is Onaji Mawid, co-host of Race Treaty, thanking the listening audience for listening in and asking you to spread this, because we know we do record our podcasts. I'm asking you to spread this as far as possible. Let 2017 be the year of Black forgiveness. This is my call, and I'm saying we have the prototype, we have the archetype right in front of us, and the first step is to play this tape with your family so they can hear it and have them reflect on it. And then in time, not necessarily that time, but in time, they will come to see how it's applicable to their lives and the forgiveness that they have to do, and in fact, the forgiveness that we have to do. This is Onaji Mawid signing off for Race Treaty. Thank you very much. Good night, family.